This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant, and he's back from the bowels of New York, from Western New York, where he watched the Los Angeles Rams absolutely take it in the shorts. They got hosed. You hate to see it, as they fell to 2-1 on a last-minute touchdown pass by Josh Allen, but it was a fourth-down pass interference. Look, we're not going to talk to him all about that, maybe for a second, but we've got some Seahawks 3-0 start to discuss at Blue 42 with Brock Ewart.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Morning, Brock. How are you now?
Good morning, Paul. What a weekend. What a wild, wild, wild weekend. Starting college football Saturday. And our beloved Seahawks, once again, giving you guys more than, 15 hours of conversation during a week? 3 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're giving you lots and lots and lots more than 15 hours of content because they are fascinating.
That end result worth jumping through a table for, like you see sometimes from Bills fans in Western New York. Did you witness any of that? I know there isn't anybody out there.
No, Bills Mafia was unfortunately. They did hire a plane and flew a banner a couple hours before the game, which was kind of cool. They all did some GoFundMe site to share their love for the Bills players. And you drive up to that stadium. That is by far the most collegial atmosphere in the NFL. It feels like a Big Ten, like a very large Big Ten stadium that you drive up to. There's a lot of bars. There's a lot of residences. There are some tough parts of town. And, yeah, they love their Bills. And they're kind of like the Seahawks, finding remarkable ways to win.
Russell Wilson, remarkable. With the way he's been playing, what can actually slow him and this offense down?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think if a team can truly shut down that run game, and, you know, the Cowboys, the Seahawks didn't run for, you know, as many yards as they did the first 2 weeks, but Chris Carson still got on the edges, and Russell was still able to create in the run game. If you face an opponent like a Tampa Bay, who is an excellent rush defense, right? If you face one of the elite rush defenses where they can commit less resources, 4, 5, 6 guys, to really stop that run game and stifle Chris Carson and hold those runs to zero or negative runs, as Aaron Donald has done in his years with the LA Rams, right? You create negative run plays. I mean, as long as the Seahawks are getting 2 or 3 yards per run and all of the play action off of it in the numerous formations and a much better, let's face it, a much better pass blocking offensive line with Posick and Shell and Dwayne Brown and the tight ends that they employ in their pass protection. Yeah, I think, Paul, honestly, the only way is if you have a group that can truly stifle the run and create negative plays in that run game, which I think can be hard to do.
We saw Seattle's passing game. It's not that I don't want to offer any sort of attempt at a criticism here, because Russ throws for 300 yards and 5 touchdowns. It did seem like it became less proficient in the third quarter. Was that due to the coverage or the pass rush?
Yeah. Yes, I would say a little bit more the former, Danny. And it was kind of cool talking to, and I hope if it gets annoying with me sharing little stories from the road or these other teams, and you can just punch me in the face or say, hey, stop talking about your other games. But Sean McVay was pretty cool to talk to in our production meeting, and he really judges himself as a play caller with how many times, especially in the first, you know, scripted plays, the first quarter of a game, Danny, how many times his primary target in that play they put together is open versus how many times Jared's got to get to 2 or 3 or throw it away or scramble. He really judges himself on making sure those primary guys are open. And man, for 2.5, you know, games, it's felt like every time Russell's dropped back, his primary guy was open, right? I mean, whether it was a deep shot, whether it was a rub route, whether it's a tight end, even checkdowns or screens, everything was there. And then, what were there, 3 or 4 possessions yesterday that ended up in punts? where Russ is dropping back, and it's primary's not there, secondary's not there, third is not there, and he's continuing to kind of hold it and then either scramble around or create on the playground. So, and I think that was a little bit more dictated by coverage of just saying enough is enough. We're not going to play man. We're not going to, you know, rush. We're not going to, you know, rush five or six. We're going to rush four, and we're going to ask our guys to actually be deeper than the deepest, which Troy Aikman was screaming for over the course of that game. So those safeties got tremendous. Man, it is funny how mad Troy gets at
his Cowboys. Hilarious. I don't know what Xavier Woods is doing here. Now he's finally, and then he'll point out when he corrects it, and he'll be like, he's doing that. I don't know why he wasn't doing that in the first quarter. It's hilarious. Yes.
Yeah, he gets, I don't think he's like pro Cowboy.
He's angry Cowboy.
Red hot Cowboy. So, yeah, they finally got deeper than the deepest and you know, created some lack of rhythm for the first time in two and a half games for the Seahawks passing game.
Question two. Chris Carson was hurt on a play in which it sure looked like Tristan Hill dove on top of his legs, hugged tight, and rolled. What's your perspective on the play?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. That alligator roll that they like to call it. Yes, I don't think there's any question. Was Tristan also the one that hit Russell in the head?
Yes.
Yeah. So that guy likes to flirt on the line of dirty, obviously. And you don't play the Cowboys. Flirt. What's that?
I don't even know if it's flirting. One of those, you get the benefit of the doubt, maybe.
Correct.
Two?
Correct. Yeah, that was really gross with Chris in particular. You know, sometimes those defense alignment, especially those that don't get home to the quarterback very much and don't get sacks, and, you know, when they get a chance to hit, it's just like, oh, my gosh, such a reward for all this grunt labor. And I'll give them the benefit of the doubt at times with that, but not for the alligator roll. That was filthy, man. That was uncalled for. That's more than likely, I would think, going to have to be a fine. I don't know if he's been fined before or if it's a severe warning. But, yeah, I don't know how you look at that play and don't say, yeah, he was intentionally continuing to grab and roll and use his body weight like Rowdy Roddy Piper used to do in the Figure Four, you know, to really try to injure your foe. And that's not what this game is about.
When a player does something like that, where does that come from? Because it feels like these guys are all together in this, and they all know that your career can come to an end so quickly, and yet you do have the Vontaze Burfict of the world and other players who...
Burfict's never done anything like this. You lay off my client, Vontaze
Burfict. I forgot. Danny O'Neill, the big Vontaze Burfict defender. But you'll see this from the occasional player, and they consistently do it. Do players on his own team come to him after the game and say, dude, what was that all about?
Probably. They probably could. Yeah, and he doesn't have a real long resume in this NFL like a Burfict does, right? I mean, he's not been a guy that's really made his mark, so more than likely it will be a vet like, dude, that we don't want to represent that. That's just not, you know, we can go out and hit somebody as hard as you want, knock the snot in their eyeballs out of their head. But, you know, you start to do that, it really... It affects all of us. It brands all of us as dirty. So I would think some of the more veteran players on that team would do it, Paul. I think you got to go back, some years and even decades where you did have coaches, defensive line coaches in particular, that really liked putting bounties on quarterbacks and hitting quarterbacks and making sure they could do all they can, knowing that if you knock the starting quarterback out of a game, the likelihood of you winning that game is very, very high, because most teams, and especially today, even today, don't have quality backups. So you would see more from a defensive line coach or an entire defensive line group. That felt like a one-off. That felt dirty, and that felt like there may be some repercussions.
Somebody should find him. And talking about this last night, Big Ray volunteered.
Did he?
Yes. He said, because I said, that seems like the sort of thing. Look, I know we've generally moved away from, like, we don't fight in society anymore, which I'm sure that there's really good reasons for. I think there are instances in which fighting can resolve stuff, and, like, someone like that should get beat up. I clearly am not tough enough nor big enough to do it. But Ray just raises it. Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, I bet if that happened in the first quarter, right? Or second quarter. I think it was so late in the game. Those guys were blocking anyway. I mean, Ethan Posick's going to mix it up now. Dwayne Brown's going to mix it up. Brandon Schell's a big old dude. They've got guys that would absolutely be willing to step in that phone booth and give that dude the business. So I think in that time, it was more of, man, game on the line, late in the game, still blocking, probably didn't even really notice or see it until they watch it on tape. And, you know, they won't get another shot at them until maybe the playoffs.
As a texter brings up on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer's text line, I think Michael Bennett said it best, should be fired and suspended. Good job, texter.
Fired and suspended.
Question number three. All right, Brock, the Seahawks defense. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the issues with the coverage, the lack of pressure? What are we pointing at here?
You know what's interesting, guys, is, and I know Pete, you know, didn't really like some of my comments or commentary, not just mine, but others about the pass rush last week, and you know, kind of made the point about, hey, we had a number of other opportunities. In watching this game back last night, so I kind of watched it at the airport running around, and I came home and just watched it quickly a second time. You realize they hit Dak Prescott 10 times? They had 10 QB hits. I said to you guys before the year, one of my big concerns is they were near the bottom of the league last year with, I think, in the low 60s as for the season when it came to hits. They hit him 10 times. They sacked him 3 times. They took the ball away 3 times. They did enough good stuff, quality stuff. But, man, Pete, and I know you guys are going to talk to him next hour, he's got 3 words that define his defense. And it doesn't matter if it's man or zone. And those 3 words are stay on top. Stay on top. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it at safety. They couldn't do it at corner. They couldn't do it at linebacker. They just could not stay on top. And that had to be to him. And I think that's why Bobby was so disappointed after the game, because he knows that that's every single day. That is fundamental. Day one, you walk in the door. And I don't care that you didn't have an off season. They've had enough dudes that have played there. You walk in the door, you see those words every day. It's all about the ball and stay on top and stay on top and stay on top. And to give up big play after big play is the anti-Pete Carroll defense. So I don't think he will, you know, step back from that at all today. I think he will take total ownership. And I really felt bad. That was one of those games, Danny, where you remember when Holmgren would say, oh, bless your heart. Bless your heart for trying. Bless your heart for scrambling. I had a lot of bless your hearts for Trey Flowers yesterday. His confidence is shattered. His game right now is broken. I have not seen a corner play that bad since Cyril Simon in the Super Bowl, where you're like, this guy just can't, you know, he can't function right now. He can't tackle, which he normally does really well. He can't play the ball. He can't stay on top. I felt terrible for him, because as a professional, this is his job. You never, ever want to produce in that kind of way, put that kind of film out there, and hopefully he can rebound.
It certainly looked like on the long touchdown, the last touchdown he gave up to Michael Gallup, that you could actually see him thinking. You could see him thinking, oh, I need to turn now. I can't grab. I need to find the ball. And you could see him going through all of the coaching points, and he never found the ball because it's not natural to him. He's not in a spot where he can make plays.
No, he is unfortunately broken. It's too bad. Ugo Amadi was awesome. And we'll get into some of that tomorrow. I mean, he was phenomenal and physical, and just many of those things that he flashed a year ago, he did once again. I mean, to see Alton Robinson be a factor, LJ Collier looked a little bit twitchy and made a few plays. I mean, there were actually, Jaron Reed was hyperactive, and yes, Dallas's O-line was banged up, and it was a group that, you know, you should get after, and they did with 10 QB hits. It's just those big plays, man, time and time and time again, they just kill you defensively, and especially when it's the essence of what Pete Carroll loves to do.
That is Blue 42. Brock, always great to talk with you. How mad were the Rams after that game?
Not as mad as I thought, honestly.
Oh, really?
I wonder if maybe that interception, because the interception was as bad. I don't know if you saw much of the game.
That's true.
That was and you know what? Here, I'll tell you a funny little story. So that happens, and Jennings and Myers and me and Prayer and everybody's like, how in the world? And so we go to commercial, and I didn't even think anything of it, but I was like, gosh, doesn't that remind you of the Fail Mary and the death stare that Greg Jennings gave me in that moment? So I was like, man, I didn't even. He's like, don't you ever.
he was
fired up. That was a bad call. So kind of evened out yesterday in that one. And fortunately for the Bills and unfortunately for the Rammers.
Yeah, Brock, we really appreciate it. We'll look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
Be well, guys.
That is Blue 42. It's brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. There was the play we're talking about. It was Rams-Bills, which was actually a really good game. The Bills went up 25 points. They were up 28-3. The Rams scored 29 straight points, came roaring back. But there was a play in the midst of that comeback where it was essentially a jump ball that Josh Allen threw. And his tight end, I believe it was Croft, caught it. And as they're on their way down, the safety for the Rams, Johnson, grabs hold of it. And they initially award it as a catch to the Buffalo player. Like, that's how it's – and they go to the replay review, and they overturn it and say it's an interception. Where, like, watching it, I could see if they had ruled it an interception, saying that, like, hey, there's not enough to really tell what happened there. But they ruled it was a catch and changed it, which meant that there had to be – and I was like, there's no – that looks like he caught it. He came down with the ball. Then the guy took it away from him, and they're like, yep, interception. It was inexplicable. But then Buffalo got the benefit of a pass interference penalty on fourth down. The game should have been over, and they gave him a PI penalty, and it certainly was not to the magnitude of most other stuff we're seeing.
You know, it was a bad call. I think the Rams are doing something here, though. I think the Rams cornerbacks, Danny, are flopping. And I felt like on this play, like we saw with Jalen Ramsey on that armbar with Michael Gallup that ultimately cost the Cowboys a chance to beat the Rams in week one, I think that the Rams cornerback sort of falling off and backing off and then raising his arms up, I feel like he ended up singling himself out by doing that. And I don't know that the flag gets thrown if he doesn't do the, not me.
Yeah, it was the final result is good for Seattle. Seattle's alone atop the
totally
NFC West.
I'm totally fine with it.
But it was a strange course to the game. And Dallas now has three down-to-the-wire finishes. And maybe this is going to be a year where we see all sorts of weird stuff happen in the NFL. It certainly looks like it so far. It looks like offenses have a huge advantage. In part, that's certainly because of the lack of a crowd. And I think that makes a comeback like Dallas's yesterday significantly easier because you can communicate more. I'm not sure exactly what goes into it. Certainly Seattle had injuries across its defense yesterday. We'll talk to Pete Carroll about that. But you lose Jamal Adams to a strained groin. You didn't have Delano Hill because of a back. You didn't have Quentin Dunbar. You lose Jordan Brooks. They lost some other ones. But Brock's saying to us there, look, the cardinal rule of Pete's defense is stay on top, and Seattle could not do that yesterday.
What happens when you can't stay on top, though? What if you're just incapable of it? Because that's the problem yesterday. They were just incapable of it. It wasn't as if there were some real boneheaded decisions. They were just getting outrun.
It's the one thing that a guy will get benched for. That more than anything else among corners is what results in changes, and we've seen it. Brandon Browner in Seattle's Super Bowl season in 2013, I remember them yanking him out of a game against Indianapolis, and then subsequently he got suspended that year, and Byron Maxwell emerged as the starter. It's the one thing that will trigger Pete Carroll. It's a deal breaker. I mean, honestly, like the defense is predicated around, we're going to run with opposing, I'm going to ask you to grab him. You're going to make contact, and you can't get beat over the top. All of the other things, we'll allow completions underneath, and I'm not going to freak out if the opposing quarterback throws for 400 yards. But if you get beat over the top outside the numbers, there's nothing my defense can do. It can't work that way. It absolutely has to be. So you'll see changes. If you can't do that, you can't play in Pete's defense.
Bend but don't break. If you break, though, I mean, who are they going to bench these corners for? That's the other problem. I mean, after Trey Flowers, who is it that you really want to have lining up on the outside? Like, I don't think you're in really a situation to succeed out there. Is Lyndon Stevens from the practice squad all of a sudden going to step in there?
Yes. If you get beat on the outside, somebody else will be in there that won't get beat on the outside. Like, that will be Pete's approach. You will see him start to churn through guys. It can't be the, hey, this is what we've got to go with. His defense doesn't work if that happens. Like, the bend but don't break. If you break, He's going to have to find other people. You're going to see Ugo Amadi start out there. Like, those are the different sort of things that you'll start to see, because you can't once a guy gets starting beat over the top outside the numbers, Pete's defense cannot work that way.
Man, I'm thinking about that as a possibility. Imagine a 5'8" corner in this Seahawks defense with Ugo Amadi on the outside. But, I mean, he is right now, in that game that you just played yesterday, he was your most reliable defensive back, which is a little troubling. And that also includes Jamal Adams, who before the groin injury, I don't think it was his best game either.
Yeah, it probably wasn't. They keep having to use him as a rusher, and that was the other thing. Seattle did get some pressure. And that Seattle was able to get some pressure. Now, Dallas is without its left tackle, Tyron Smith, and they were essentially starting two rookies at their two tackles.
And their center, didn't their center check out of the game at 1.2?
He was in and out over the course of the game and didn't finish the game at center. But Seattle was able to get some pressure. And you saw 10 quarterback hits of Dak Prescott. They did affect him. They did create a turnover. Alton Robinson had a big sack late. Shaquem Griffin certainly looked like. I think we're just going to see more younger guys start to emerge in and get more opportunities to play, because if nothing else, you need to look at ways to prevent and discourage that kind of letting opponents throw with impunity against you.
And I mean, look, the pass rush, as you mentioned, statistically, I found on Friday, well, statistically, it's not as bad. And Brock just mentioned it, 10 more pressures, adding to the eighth most pressures in the NFL going into Sunday. I guess at least something is going all right on the front seven of things. And they are doing really well after that first week where it looked like they might get run over all season long. They have done a really good job in back-to-back weeks against the ground game. So the front seven, I think, has, for the most part, answered the call. I wonder what you do, though, about the secondary. And I don't know if there's somebody else that they might have to turn to, Danny, but I am uncomfortable with the lack of depth behind Trey Flowers and Shaquem Griffin after a rough game for the two of them, though Griffin did have the interception and Flowers did block a kick.
Mike Sando, who now covers the NFL for The Athletic, been a longtime reporter covering the league. He had an interesting statistic, which through three games, the average offensive points per game right now is 24.8, which is 2.8 points higher than any other year since 2000.
Uh-huh.
So it's not just that it's the most, it's significantly more than any other year. 2012, teams were averaging 22.03. 2 years ago, offenses were allowed averaging 22.03 through 3 weeks. 2015, 21.63. This year, 24.8. A pretty significant spike, which gives you an idea about the direction. And Seattle? Well, that means they're playing to their strength with this offense. We'll take you through some of the most important things from this game. That's coming up next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
A guy like him has all the talent in the world.
Russell looks, sets, has time. Going to throw to the end zone.
You know, he could take it easy. He could do this, do that. One of the first guys there every day. He's one of the guys that's always ready to work.
DK, he makes the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks.
Always ready to get extra reps. I mean,
suddenly he flashes in the end zone, and it's DK Metcalf, and he, in fact, makes up for the play earlier.
What we really connected on more than anything else was life, you know, just, you know, I think what's really important to him, same things that are really important to me, you know, faith and family and all those things. But, you know, I just think that he loves the game. He wants to be great.
And it's only fitting, isn't it, that he's the guy who comes up with the big reception, the touchdown, with 1:47 left to play.
It was, I don't know if fitting is the right way to say it, is the ending, but the fact that DK Metcalf, with just under 2 minutes to play, caught a 29-yard pass in which he ran from one side of the field to the other, hauling in what turned out to be a crucial conversion that really allowed Seattle to win that game, came after what was one of the more inexplicable, frustrating mistakes early in the game. DK had an awesome start to this season. He also had probably the toughest mistake you can see a player make.
Nothing makes my blood boil more, Danny, than when someone gets cocky walking into the end zone. And we see it a lot. It only happens usually about once a year, and usually all of football. I've seen it twice from DeSean Jackson. I saw it once from Joe Mixon at Oklahoma against Ohio State. Whatever the case, the reason that I believe that fumbles out of the end zone should be touchbacks are because of these plays, because he just forgot what he was doing. To his credit, he toasted the guy that was in front of him, but that was covering him, but that guy made a heck of a play, and you can never, ever, ever, ever let up on the football, especially at the goal line, and he just sort of forgot that there are other players on the field and that he wasn't in the
Russell
end.
Wilson is now up over 143 on his quarterback rating, drops back seven steps, looks, he's going to let it fly again. DK Metcalf out there, he's open, he's got the catch, he is in, did he get to the end zone? I don't know if he broke the plane of the end zone, the ball was slapped out of his hands, and it went out the back of the end zone. Let's see, did he break the plane? If he did not, it is going to be a touchback.
It was brutal. And I think the toughest thing is for perception of it, because as far as mistakes go, it's a pretty straightforward one, right? The guy thinks he's clear. He thinks he's free and clear. And that sort of, whether it's lacking an awareness of somebody encroaching behind him, or look, this has happened to me a lot of times before and nobody's ever caught me from behind because I'm so big and so fast. The TV audience and the fans there are watching it approach. And it's like there's this growing dread of like, oh, God, don't let it. It's this perfect. People on Twitter reacted, bench him, like put him down. And I was like, well, no, that's a terrible yeah. idea, because that's trying to make the point of, hey, this is my way. Like, you did something totally. He doesn't think what he did was acceptable. Like, if the guy goes back to the bench and it's like, hey, sometimes that happens. It's just not. Or if he does it again, where you're like, you really don't take this here. But look, people make mistakes. Like, it's the measure of it. But man, that's such a costly one. The idea, a 62-yard completion and a touchback that should have been a 63-yard touchdown. It was just brutal, and you can feel what a gut punch it is to a team.
I mean, we're talking about, Danny, in the early moments of the second half, the difference between a 37-15 game and a 30-15 game. And this game could have been lost because of that play. It was very close to that, because Seattle in the second half only scored on that drive after Jaron Reed forced the fumble, and all of a sudden, they find themselves down 31-30. It's great that DK was able to get redemption there, but anyone, if you're a kid listening, if you still have football left to be played, hold on to the ball, all 4 points of contact, maybe even bring in a second arm over it. Like, you can't ever have that happen. And DK, he had some fumbling issues last year. This is one of those moments where I don't think it's necessarily a problem with the way that he holds the football as much as it's just careless. And you saw it in his face afterwards. He was sort of chuckling it off. I have no problem with that, because I think he knows how stupid of a play it was.
Yeah. And look, Russ talked about going over and saying to him, hey, you got to stay involved. You're going to have to be able to make up for it later. You have to stay involved. And that's true. You can't let one play beat you twice. Like, you can't let that play change the way or the intensity with which you play. But you certainly can never let something like that happen again, right? Like, in our generous moments, we can say everybody screws up and everybody makes a mistake. You can't, because I remember that too, that DeSean Jackson's had that happen twice. Like, that's happened. And his almost worse, because it was dropping it before he fully got into the end zone.
What are you doing? Like, right. Like, at least with DK, it was forced out. I mean, I suppose these are semantics at this point, as we try to talk ourselves into this not being as big of a deal. My goodness.
It was so brutal. It was just brutal. And Russell Wilson, as someone who went and talked with Metcalf, I do think that Russell brings a mental toughness to the position.
I talked to him afterwards. You know, I told him, listen, you're going to have to make a play down the road. So, you know, get back in, get focused again. Let's, revamp. You know, things happen. There's no excuse for it. He knows that. He wants to be the best in the world, you know, and, the good thing about him, you know about him, is he'll never do it again, and he'll be ready to the next opportunity that comes to him. And, you know, like, for me, you know, he's like a little brother to me. You know, we're so close, you know. And so to me, I told him, I said, listen, you know, there's another opportunity. When it comes your way, you're going to make the play. You know, just speaking life into it, just knowing that something great's going to happen. Sure enough, he makes the game-winning touchdown, which, worked out for us.
In between the fumble and the touchdown reception, do you feel like that play affected DK at all?
I don't, because it didn't seem like Seattle was able to find much downfield in the interim. So it's kind of this, hey, I think Dallas adjusted what they were doing. I think Dallas changed up and that the opportunities weren't there either for him or for Tyler Lockett downfield. I think that's what happened. He certainly, I mean, he finished with more than 100 yards receiving, but he wasn't a huge part of the game after that. He had that great, and what's becoming one of his most effective routes is he just goes charging downfield and then stops. And just that selling the respect that opposing cornerbacks are giving him because of his speed means that at almost any point you want, you can pick up 8 yards by just throwing in the ball. Hey, run as hard as you can, turn around. Just stop. Stop and turn. So my reaction is I don't think that he seemed like someone who would be taken out of the game, but certainly something changed after that with Seattle's ability to throw downfield.
Text in, Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, Joe Judge would have cut him.
See, and that's the sort of the reason you discipline a player, the reason you discipline a player like that is if they're either not learning or they refuse to recognize that you have to create a consequence, right? Like the idea of benching someone or cutting someone is that you're creating a consequence. If you bench DK Metcalf, you're hurting your team.
Yeah, I agree.
Like you're hurting your team to make a point, which doesn't need to be made because any professional will understand that that can't ever happen again.
What do you think Belichick would have done, though? Because I think Belichick would have at the very least considered benching him for a fumble that egregious. The egregious nature of it is, I think, what makes it really bad. Like, it's like, man, you're really careless. If you do something like this, we are not putting you back on the field.
Maybe Belichick benches him. I think that's the wrong way because I think that's benching.
It
that's
definitely hurts
through
you.
Fear.
Right.
I think it's motivating through fear. And I think ultimately guys will get more out of players if you have a guy that you don't need to convince him how bad that was. He knows it. That you don't need to tell him. He knows it. And if he doesn't know it, that the players and the teammates around him will make it clear that that's something that you absolutely cannot do. If you have to create consequences, if you have to say, like, I'm going to really show him here, you're governing your team like a junior high, like a junior high hall monitor. And I'm not sure how, I don't think that gets you more than treating them like adults.
I think it works in certain situations, but I am with you in that if you took DK Metcalf out of that game, when you were just having as much success as you were picking apart that Cowboys secondary, it would have made things a lot more difficult, especially on that last drive. And who knows if you even get that redemption moment and are able to retake the lead.
It is Danny and Gallant. The Seattle Seahawks are 3-0 for just the second time in Pete Carroll's 11 seasons here. We're going to take a look. Maybe it's not a wart because it's just the defense, but how concerned should we be? And we'll be setting the table. Pete Carroll's going to join us at 9:30.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I am not liking the way that the defense is working it. And I hope that things turn around for this secondary. But Danny, it's hard to feel that way. Yes, Sunday may have also been a result of missing players. Quinton Dunbar, Jamal Adams, much like the week before, was perhaps a result of missing Quandre Diggs. But the Seahawks have allowed more passing yards in the first three games of the NFL year than any team in NFL history. And they surpassed the team with the second most, New England in 2011, by over 100 yards.
Yeah, it's not good by any measure. And I feel that any attempt to discuss it makes me seem like I'm excusing it. But
there it is.
Maybe they're getting them all out of the way now because there's a finite number of passing yards that maybe you'll be able. And if they're this bad to begin, or maybe it's because they've been playing with the lead and they built double digit leads in the second half of each and every game. Or maybe it's that you mentioned some of the personnel things. Look, I don't know. It's not good. At the same time, I would say this, that this is a league right now where it looks like you're going to have pitcher's duels. Like that was the Green Bay-New Orleans game last night. And why did New Orleans end up losing it? Probably the biggest play in that game happens when Drew Brees is on the bench and they lost a fumble when Taysom Hill was the quarterback. That go with your strength. And so far, Russell's been better than everybody he's played. And I don't know if the defense is going to get better, But I don't think Russell Wilson's necessarily going to get worse. So, hey, 3-0, let's not beat dead gift horses in the mouth.
It's incredible that he is defense proof. I mean, this thing has made it as difficult as possible for the offense to get the necessary points to win. And I mean, they find themselves in third down situations. Not a very good third down converting team on the year thus far. I wonder if it's sustainable. I feel like it's sustainable. And we've seen it now 3 weeks in a row. The offense should be able to outweigh this defense week in, week out. The real question is, okay, when you go up against a defense that's really good, is Russ going to be able to do this? Because I feel like you are just going to see these consequences on defense for yourself going forward.
What defenses are good? Have you seen any across the league? I mean, Baltimore,
I thought
reputation-wise. Yeah, man, the Rams just got beat by Josh Allen.
Yep.
The Rams gave up. The Rams were down 28-3 to Josh Allen, and it certainly did not. He was moving the ball with impunity for the first three quarters. Like, I don't know if there are good defenses.
I thought New England.
Yeah.
San Francisco's banged up.
San Francisco's thrashed. I mean, their injuries are different than Seattle's injuries in that their biggest injuries aren't getting better. Garoppolo will be back. He didn't play yesterday. But Nick Bosa and Solomon Thomas, Nick Bosa is their second best slash most important player behind Garoppolo. He's not going to be back the entire year. Seattle's going to get healthier. The guys that they've lost for the year are their strong side linebacker, where they should have a rookie that steps into that role, and their nickelback, who, by the way, Ugo Amadi, of all the different complaints that were there, and they've won two games. The first one, they were down to their third string free safety in Lano Hill, who, by the way, helped make the play that won the game. And yesterday, they were down to their third string strong safety because Jamal Adams was hurt. Lano Hill was inactive. And what happened? Ryan Neal, this is the formula for Seattle to win, is get the most unlikely player to be drafted into service because of ejection and or injury, and then watch him make a play that helps save the game. Bing, bang, boom. That's just how it's going to go this year.
I wish it was as simple as bing, bang, boom, and maybe going up against Matt Ryan and Cam Newton and Dak Prescott. Okay, things are going to be a little easier going forward. Maybe Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't tear you apart, seeing as you have, again, allowed the most passing yards in NFL history through these first three games. My hope is that this is the only game where the Seahawks mantra, Danny, isn't broken of stay on top.
You got to stay on top. You got to do that. By the flip token, they've played some decent running backs so far, right?
They have.
It's not like Atlanta's been running the pants off of anyone, but last week, New England's been able to run the ball effectively, and they didn't give up. They squelched. They absolutely... Zeke Elliott didn't get anything going.
They deserve a lot of credit for what they did to Zeke yesterday. And, you know, I'm starting to wonder if Pete was onto something with some of the things that he was saying about the front seven. They are getting pressures. 10 more pressures after 23 on the year, which was eighth in the NFL going into the game. But if the secondary has these lapses, you know, and Danny, my big problem is I don't know where the reinforcements are coming from. It's one thing if there were injuries and everyone can come back in and you feel like by the end of the year you're going to be A-okay. But what's going to happen with this Quentin Dunbar knee injury that all of a sudden at the last second causes him to miss the game? I mean, he clearly is your best cornerback right now, and without him, you looked hopeless.
Do you want to hear this? This is the leader in the clubhouse for dumbest things, I think. It's a crowded clubhouse, but dumbest things, I think. I think Seattle's better than other teams about managing injuries, so I'm less concerned about soft tissue injuries.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Their knee injury of Quentin Dunbar, the fact that Lano Hill was held out. I think, like Jamal Adams coming out of the game, I'm worried about Jamal Adams. That didn't look good, and it looked like he was limping pretty bad. I don't necessarily expect, but I actually think Seattle does a good job managing soft tissue injuries. I think Seattle's kind of like the Phoenix Suns used to be in the NBA,
ooh,
where guys went there to be able to elongate and create more length to their career. Chronically injured guys like Steve Nash went there and like all of a sudden became significantly healthier. I think Seattle's really good at managing those injuries.
Well, I hope they work their magic, because it was Quentin Dunbar, Damian Lewis, Chris Carson, Jamal Adams, Jordan Brooks, Mike Iupati. Are there any more that I'm missing, Danny? I'm sure there are.
Was Yupati hurt or was he just old? I think at this point it's kind of tough to tell between those two. And Jamarco Jones came in and played okay. I think we got a solution, though. So there's all these people that want DK Metcalf punished, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess he didn't get targeted for two quarters, and was that sufficient punishment?
Okay.
And we need help in the backfield.
Yeah.
Let's have DK Metcalf play defense.
Double duty?
Yeah. No, I don't even. He gets to take series off. Like we'll be able to take give some opportunities to Freddie Swain.
He plays every single down now. I like this idea. A 6'4" behemoth at safety. You just have him running around and scaring people. He doesn't even have to hit them. How about he just runs up like in coverage, ooga booga booga, and just yells it at them? I mean, I'd be pretty scared if DK Metcalf did that to me.
Or he becomes the big eraser at the back. Like as a schematic, you start letting guys get over the top. So the quarterback, you bait them into interceptions.
Oh, yeah.
And then DK Metcalf wins jump balls.
I like that. I mean, there are very few people that are going to be able to beat him on that side of things.
Earl Thomas.
I mean, you can't even say no. You can't even say no right now,
Earl
Danny.
Thomas.
You can't say no. I mean, yes. Mr. Bird, he is no longer in the NFL, and for whatever reason, no team has even wanted to sniff him. But, I mean, if you're without Jamal Adams for a period of time and you don't have Lano Hill, which, I mean, I can't believe we're saying if you don't have Lano Hill, your safety situation is in dire straits. No Marquise Blair as well. I can't say don't make it. I can't even do that anymore, Danny.
We got a little bit of good news here. Tom Pelissero, who covers the NFL for the NFL Network, an MRI confirmed Chris Carson's ligaments are intact.
Phew.
It's just a minor knee sprain, source said. In fact, he's got a chance to be ready for this week's game at Miami. So a bullet dodged, whoa, it appears. That looked awful. And anybody who's seen the replays of that and where Tristan Hill, number 72 on the Cowboys, certainly the most charitable thing you could say is that it seems incredibly unnecessary. And you see the reaction of players like Marcus Spears, Ray Roberts, other guys I know, Cam Cleland, who people here know from his time with the Huskies and was an NFL tight end, first with the New Orleans Saints, certainly appeared to be a very dirty play.
It's a shame that it happened later in the game because you would have been able to deal some street justice on the field. I mean, that's one of those things where it just goes completely unpunished by other players. All right, he gets fined. I'm sure that'll hurt him because I don't know who he is, so I doubt that he's making
second
a whole lot of money.
Second-round pick out of Central Florida.
He's a second-round pick?
Yeah, he is.
All right. Well, I guess I know why he's a second-round pick. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. The Seahawks with a 38-31 victory over the Dallas Cowboys, despite the defense, because Russell Wilson has been awesome. To talk more about that offensive performance and the finer points of not fumbling the ball before you walk into the end zone, we're going to welcome Michael Bumpus aboard. Pete Carroll Show coming up at 9:30.